Hello, and welcome to the Acolytes of Merlin. We are your hosts, John and Johnny, and we're going to be doing something a little different today. Instead of talking about one book, we're going to talk about multiple, specifically what we did to sustain our reading habits from, I would say, adolescence when it was quite strong into adulthood and just kind of the form that takes. So, Johnny, if you want to get us started, I'm very curious how high school transitioned into college for you for your reading hobby.
Yeah, so everyone. I would say, and I'll go through a there are certain mostly series or authors that kind of bridged certain gaps and inspired me to continue reading as like a major hobby of mine. This is a little more of a footnote, but and a little earlier, but the Dresden Files in high school, that was at least a series that I was reading for a while. I have complicated feelings about it, but it was something that kept me very engaged throughout high school, or at least like the time it took me to read the series, the books that were out at the time. It's a fun wizard detective story that becomes a lot bigger than that. Yeah, so that's
How
all I have to say on. Go ahead.
was that different from, did that stand out from the types of things you had been reading up to that point?
No, it was just a more like a slightly more adult version of it, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah, like it just yeah, like it, and it was popular at the time, or at least becoming popular at the time.
Just kind of a
So,
natural point to go to for as
yes,
your tastes
yeah,
were
and.
changing.
Yeah, and that one was a direct recommend, actually a direct recommendation from one of my uncles who
Okay.
we had on here in like one of the very
Yes,
first
yeah.
episodes.
Yeah, we did. I know how
But
instrumental they've been in your journey.
yes. Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't say it was particularly different than what I was reading at the time, but it was a larger scale of what I had been reading previously.
Okay.
The next and one a series I'd bring up, and I forget exactly what I said when we covered this about this, but the Hyperion Cantos by Dan Simmons. Also I don't think that my uncle specifically recommended this, but he had it on his bookshelf, and the shrike was an image that had was I was intrigued by for a very long time before I actually read the books. Yeah, it's an incredible series. I
Yes, it is.
that yeah that was the I feel like that was the first quote unquote adult sci-fi that I'd have to look back on my spread like to see to think about other stuff I'd read at the time, but it was certainly very gripping and exposed me to like the wider breadth of things that sci-fi can like does as a genre, because it really hits on a lot of different, I don't even want to say tropes, but just parts, 'cause that's a loaded word, but things and aspects of the genre, and it doesn't a lot of them really in either really well or in different ways.
He well, yes, it is it's good at being a chameleon, and so gives you a good it's a good introduction in its own way, because it tells you the different kinds of sci-fi that you could focus in on reading into the future. The first book anyway.
Yes, yeah. Like the first book literally being several examples, like the whole point being you're literally reading several short stories slash novellas in different subgenres, which the whole idea of genre is interesting, and I'll come back to that some of my later stuff or more recent stuff. But yeah, that I would say was definitely had me interested in continuing to read. Although I didn't really have any people to engage with it. There weren't many people at the time that I really anyone else that I knew that had read the books at the time.
Yes, I ran into that difficulty as well. Very good. So is that all for high school?
I those are the main ones. I mean, I read there's a lot that I read, but those are the ones that stick out. Like I read Eye of the World in high school, but didn't get back to it until after college.
Right.
And then I read the first Mistborn book and then bounced off of Well of Ascension, the second one. Which we'll also return to. those were the main ones that stick out as far as stuff I have still engaged with in some way since then.
So those were, as you were going into college, those were kind of the stories that were foremost in your mind or sticking with you. And did they inform what you dabbled in once you got to college?
Yes, I would say so. I would say so. Less those two specific series and a little more like Mistborn. Because the big thing, particularly for later college, was Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere.
Yes.
So like that was the big one in college. And we covered all of the Stormlight Archive, and I have obviously said a lot about that on this podcast. I have more complicated views on Sanderson's work now, I would say. Not all of it positive. That's not really important for this particular context. But I would say audiobooks were really crucial in me picking the Cosmere back up because.
Oh, okay.
That's how I got through Well of Ascension. I was working a job that I didn't have to really, where I was like filing papers all day. And so I was like, okay, there wasn't a ton of thought involved for large chunks of the day. So I just walked through the first trilogy. Pretty much, yeah, all the Cosmere that was out at the time. I think it was like Elantris, the first Mistborn trilogy, the first two Stormlight books, and Warbreaker, I believe. And that I was hooked. I think it was senior year, went through and reread those books and read through the rest that were then out at the time. I think there were just a few more novels and short stories I'd missed.
Okay.
And I would say that the Cosmere and Brandon Sanderson was largely responsible for catapulting me, if you will, into wanting to continue reading post-college.
And aside from that, was it also transformative of your understanding of fantasy and stories in any way?
Yes, in the sense that a lot of the struggles that the characters go through are more, I don't want to say relatable. That's not the word I'm looking for. But they're a little more, because with a lot of the main characters and point of view characters, he writes about characters with various struggles. And I think in that sense, it was transformative might not be quite the word that I use, but it's certain moments in the series have certainly helped me get through some rougher times. Mm-hmm. Put it that way. Yeah, and like that. So in that sense, I would say it was crucial in that sense.
Yeah, because certainly in Stormlight, you have these flaws as discernible traits, ones that inform their belonging to one order or another, and in general just are treated as more as badges of honor than they might be treated in other types of stories. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with that. I mean, the structure of the Stormlight Archive is like he baked all of these things literally into the structure of the series, which I mostly think the structure of the series is a good thing for what he's trying to accomplish. I think he's running into some of its limitations now, but the structure of the series and each book very much lends itself to highlighting these various struggles and traits of the characters and how they work through them, or in some cases don't, and the consequences of not working through some of those issues in the case of certain characters.
Okay.
I didn't say this at the beginning, but we won't be spoiling anything, any of these series. I mean, we will be talking about them at a high level, but we won't be getting into any sorts of plot details.
No, absolutely not. So it was instrumental then in, as you said, carrying you past college to have reading continue to be a part of your life.
Yes.
And you can acknowledge it for that, but also say that your its standing in your mind has definitely changed with the introduction of other different installments, as well as maybe different perspectives of the things that you had read at that time.
Go ahead.
What were your what were the experiences and or other series that changed that standing for you?
Well, there's two in particular that we'll get to at the end that I either am currently reading or just finished. I would say those two series, I'll just say now, are Malazan, Book of the Fallen, and The First Law World by Joe Abercrombie.
Okay.
I'll talk about those a little more in detail later, but I would say having different types of discussions about the series has illuminated some of the, we'll say, I'll use the word flaws, I guess, in some of Sanderson's writing. Generally speaking, I think some of it is I haven't really enjoyed his stuff as much the last 3 years or so. Not that I think much of it has been flat out bad, except for like Titanic, the third Skyward book. But I've had a lot more asterisks attached to my enjoyment of the series. And while the Cosmere and Sanderson's work in general, and while I have enjoyed a lot of the like seeing the Cosmere expand and seeing more of the world, that level of inventiveness and creativity has remained, but I just haven't really cared as much about the characters or a lot of the plots.
Has the overall experience retained enough of its novelty?
If you were to ask me right now, based off of what's been published in the last like 3 years, I'd be that I'm a little bit tired of some of these.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find it tired? Do you find that you know what you can expect?
Yeah, I would like certainly not. I'm certainly not predicting plot twists, but well, a couple. But like, I'm certainly not predicting what each book is going to be about, especially with the secret projects being very different from one another. And but there's certain. I know there are certain types of places that he's probably not really going to go. In terms of the ways he's exploring characters, or at least, or I should rephrase that, places he has not really gone in, like, previously, in terms of where he, the types of characters he writes, I'll put it that way.
Does that, as someone who certainly has had dipped his toe in one of the other series that you mentioned, I feel compelled to ask, does that have to do with the types of things that Joe Abercrombie does?
I mean, the short answer I would say would be yes. I mean, Abercrombie's characters are the best element of his writing, and
yes,
and there aren't really any characters that Sanderson has written that really feel quite as real as any of Abercrombie's, with the like kind of a couple, with a few exceptions, and maybe those having asterisks. Yeah, I would say yes.
Okay. So what about Abercrombie and Erickson? And if I may bring up a book that I'm curious about as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious about N.K. Jemisin. Because so I know that kind of broke its way into your favorites.
Yeah, funny you should mention that, because Fifth Season is also on the list of books I was going to talk about.
Oh, okay. I'll get out of your way.
Yeah, so Fifth Season, I would say, I'll start with that. It was, and Jemisin's also brought up in the context of she brought quote-unquote literary fiction into fantasy, for like, for a better term, and that's a whole other discussion, and you could even debate the extent to which it's worth having. Mm-hmm. But she did deal with a lot of deeper themes, and certainly bringing in pretty real world politics, or at least real world historical contexts into how she built her world. It was certainly one of that I think the thought I had when I wrote that book down was this is the book that I read, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of newer stuff being written that can really wow me.
That's a good feeling.
And that's, yeah, like that's, well, now the book's like almost 10 years old, but it was new to me as of like 2-3 years ago. So I would say that having a fantasy that dealt with some of those more, I mean, she does deal with like, it's a lot of racial stuff in particular, but also how she dealt with sexuality, I think, was handled well. And it's also a really creative and inventive world. And did certainly not one that I would ever want to live in, but it did spark that. It did definitely certainly spark that creativity. With Abercrombie, the biggest thing I keep thinking is he keeps making me want to question things. Because I would make the statement that certainly parts of the book are nihilist, or his world in general are nihilistic. That, I mean, I know that's a loaded word, and I don't feel qualified enough to fully get into all to like the philosophy of that. But
overall, it's a pretty cold take.
Yeah, yeah. it's like, and also speaking, going back to the genre thing, Abercrombie is the only person I would say that he's one of the only authors, like, the word, so the word grimdark gets thrown around a lot in these discussions, and Abercrombie is the only author I've read that I've truly felt this is grimdark, where it's defined by the characters having very little to no ability to change the bad state of the world, no matter what they try to, no matter what they accomplish, is how I would frame it, at like a high level. Yeah. So And that reading a lot of that made me uncomfortable, and in a lot of senses was, at least on first read or listen through and thinking about it, was in some ways unsatisfying. But the more I thought about it, the more it just made me want to challenge that view and say, okay, well, why did he write this the way he did? Why is he like, there has to be, cause he's actually kind of seems a really kind person. Like he wouldn't think that, I mean, I haven't listened to that many interviews with him, but you wouldn't think that he would write the books that he does if you just listen to him talk, at least from like a lay person's perspective. But, yeah, so it may be a question, okay, why is he writing these books? What can we glean? What bits of hope or positivity can we glean from these books? Because it seems like he wasn't, and I got it without getting into the whole discussion about the series or the world and the different series, he has to be trying to say something, and he doesn't, like, I don't think he wants to come out and just say, well, everything's hopeless and we should just give up.
You thought there was a nuanced message to be found.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, like, trying to tease that out has been that's the type of thing that, like, even though a lot of the stories haven't been satisfying in the traditional sense, the fact that I am still thinking, that I am continuously thinking about those stories and types of things he brings up, is that means he probably accomplished his goal. And also his characters are just phenomenal. But yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely a worthy thing to evoke in a reader. Trying not to give too much my own impressions, but my impression of in terms of how hopeless the situation, that is the first takeaway that I think that you can have from at least first law trilogy. I haven't read anything else, but another reading of it is that because of the way that certain characters I guess flirt with redemption, is mm-hmm. that it is possible to change things for the better, but it is very, very difficult to do so, and it goes against what Abercrombie views as human nature. So you can overcome it, but he's saying it's not necessarily going to happen.
Yeah, I have a very similar take on that. Like I would say it's, yeah, I mean, I don't have a ton to add, but basically that what you said, plus people are capable of changing, or maybe that he's saying that little changes that people are able to, like, people change very slowly over time and maybe not that much, but that is enough to make trying to change and become better worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. So what about Malazan?
Yes.
Or is it Malazan?
I'm going to say Malazan because that's how I have been told that Stephen Erickson pronounces it. I've heard conflicting views on that, but I'm going to say Malazan. I'm also per a lot of, but that's also not a hill I'm going to die on. When I'm done with the series, I think that it is going to be the most epic thing I've ever read, I think. And maybe Tolkien, maybe with the history of Middle Earth and such, would certainly be on par with it. But in terms of the actual, like, the meat of, like, what the story is, it will probably end up being, in terms of just the scope and the enormity of the 10 books, will end up being that for me. And this isn't like a ranking or pitch episode, and whether the extent to which and whether you should pitch Molasin to somebody is a whole conversation in itself, to which I would say it's not for everyone, for a lot similar to Abercrombie. not for everyone, but for me, it's been the world building is nothing short of incredible. It's since the other series that will the like last series we'll talk about, the Wheel of Time, there isn't a series that has had me as invested in terms of, okay, I'm going to conquer this thing, being the rest of the series.
Right, sure.
Very different than Wheel of Time. But yeah, the scope is stunning. It is a difficult series to get into and to read for different reasons. I think that largely those criticisms are valid. But I think for me, it has, and also like having people to talk to while you're reading, it really helps.
Okay.
There's some people like on like a different Discord server and on, and one of my friends in real life that, have really helped as far as that goes. And that engagement has been very satisfying and helped, similar to when we did Wheel of Time, or when I read Wheel of Time and we were recording, although it's nothing quite that structured, but so basically it's similar to Wheel of Time, had me inspired to really want to make sure I finish the series, and has me thinking about what fantasy, again, this has had me really kind of rethinking what fantasy can do as a genre, probably on the whole more so than Sanderson, in terms of just the stuff that, again, a lot of it, I'm going to circle back to the scope and the enormity of it. A lot of the characters are fun. A lot of them aren't particularly deep, at least at first glance, but how they interact with like the world, and there, I will say, as I'm reading it, one thing that has stood out is in a given scene, there's almost always a few more than one thing going on. So even if it's a quote unquote boring scene, there's at least a few revelations that are happening that connect to something else that happened before from a previous book, or like there's, so like, even if it's a scene that I'm annoyed with or I'm not really enjoying that much, there's almost always at least something that has me wanting to read further afterwards. So yeah, that was very, very rambly, but
he's good at sprinkling in all of the things that he needs to exposit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of that is what has turned a lot of people off the series. Like I said, I think that's a valid take, because it is very complicated. There's a lot of stuff that like that is revealed or that I miss, and people remind me, oh yeah, this was like revealed in this book, and I'm like, oh, I completely forgot about that. and I could see that type of thing being a turnoff, and again, I think it's valid, but for me, I think it's something that is paying off and will pay off. And there have been several moments so far, and I'm like 2 1/3 books in right now, that I haven't cried really to the extent that I have during like Stormblight or Wheel of Time or Jemison. But there have been a couple of moments where I've like closed the book and thought, whoa, like what did I just read, in terms of some of the battle sequences. He puts most other fantasy authors to shame.
Wow.
In terms, in a very different way, not like a very more, a little closer to a Jordan than a Sanderson.
But that was going to be what I was going to ask. Okay. So yeah. So it is a little less Oh, that has a bad connotation. Like, the word that came to my mind was mechanical, and that has a really bad connotation. Sanders, technical. Sanderson is more technical in his descriptions. Jordan is more visceral. And that is the context that I'd give to our listeners here if they aren't familiar.
That's a pretty good, a generally pretty good comparison. And yeah, with Erickson mostly going for the visceral, like, this is not fun. This is not good. This is not aspirational. Like, being in these battles is not something you should want to do. Now, there are a few sequences that were like, oh, that is really cool. There have been a few scenes of that, and I know that there are more that are coming, but like a lot of the violence in general is to stick the point home of this is not. Now, Abercrombie's even more in that. Well, I shouldn't say more, but he's certainly in that vein. But
And for the and I can't speak to what kinds of combat Erickson is trying to largely describes. I assume that it's a lot of at least in some part non-magic pitched battle type things. Which is a lot of Jordan and a good amount of Abercrombie as well, though I'm thinking of towards the end of the trilogy there is more of the magic type things, and even in that it is the terror, the majesty in a negative way of it is what comes through.
I would maybe with Abercrombie the majesty is not quite, I don't want to say more on that, but I get what you're saying. The asterisks I would add, and this is like as of like this week as I've been reading, I'm currently reading The Black Company by Glenn Cook, who I can see has very directly influenced Molasson.
It was done first?
Yes. Yep. Black Company was started in the 80s. And okay. Gardens of the Moon is late 90s. I think 99, but late 90s. In particular, the interactions between the soldiers and Black Company are like almost not copy-paste, but are very, there is a very direct through line from Cook to at least the military parts of Molasson.
Like beginning of Tolkien versus beginning of Jordan, that kind of.
I would say that's a fairly apt comparison. Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like a lot of these series were potentially touchstones with, you know, Cosmere with its flawed characters and Broken Earth, Jemison with its kind of political issues, and then just kind of a lot of messiness and big scope most recently. Is that all sort of a parallel to the things that you have kind of found yourself focusing on both inside and outside of reading? And to what extent did these necessarily come at a specific time or the right time versus they just kind of stood out because that's where your head is at that time? Did that make sense?
Yeah. Sanderson in particular came at the right time. Or at least me getting into the Cosmere, that in particular was at the right time. Okay. I would say in general, there is a there's certainly a parallel to be had with how I've, with the stories that I've been reading, also mapping somewhat with the types of things I'm interested in. You're not interested in outside of reading, but at least how I, with, there is some sort of parallel with my personal growth, or the types of things I would think of. Yeah, but with Sanderson in particular, I would say Jemisin was more, I just like it. There wasn't a particular timing life thing with that. Abercrombie, I would say that was more of a, the first time I read the trilogy, I didn't think quite as much of it. I liked it, but largely, but didn't have super strong opinions. And on the re-listen, when we went through it, and then when I finished up with the sequel trilogy, it was more of a lined up with my personal growth, and at least seeing, and it, yeah, at least seeing how some of the things that he's writing about map to some real world esque things. And then Malazan, I think Malazan is, it's important that I'm reading it now because of how I've matured as a reader, I would say.
And you also mentioned that there was a lot of engagement involved and necessary.
Yes.
In the series, which seems to line up with the connections that you've made in fantasy community, I might say.
Yeah, no, I would definitely say that's true. And also I think part of it is the fact that it is like a big tentpole series that I hadn't, one of the main ones I hadn't really engaged with. And so it's this new thing in a genre where there certainly are still new things for me to find, but this new to me thing that I certainly now have more context for than I would have, say, when we started Wheel of Time, in terms of its place in the genre and what it's doing relative to other stuff. Yeah, I do want to just call out Wheel of Time. I didn't quite talk about that as much. That was a, it wasn't really a, it wasn't, I was, well, certainly we spent many episodes talking about it here and a lot of time off recording talking about it and go to conventions around it every year. But but it was a through line and something that I knew I wanted to do for a while that was extremely satisfying to do as like a reading experience, both with you and the podcast, and also as a pivotal part of my general education on the fantasy genre. And so while it didn't necessarily revolutionize how I thought about this genre or reading in any way, it kept me very engaged and keeps me very engaged. And is something that has helped me, again, similar to Malazan, see, and especially with how long it took the series to be written, see how the genre has changed over time and was something that I was pretty engaged with for a while and still am. A lot of generally, like for me, the series lived up to what I had heard about it. I'll put it that way. It's a series that I think deserves and earned its reputation for better or worse in different things. I think largely for better.
This is still Wheel of Time, not.
Yes, Malazan. Sorry, yes, Wheel of Time, yes. Okay. Malazan also, I think, largely so far lives up to various things. I am not far enough in the series to have a very informed opinion on that, largely. But yes, Wheel of Time, I would say so. And certainly laid the groundwork for having this massive epic behind me, so to speak, or that I've gone through, experienced.
Yes, that must have given you momentum for future endeavors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, which, again, without Wheel of Time, I would probably not have had the appreciation for Abercrombie or Malazan that I currently do.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know about the through line.
And there's certainly other stuff that I've read that would stick out. I would be remiss if I didn't mention A Song of Ice and Fire / The Game of Thrones show, just because it was the, just because of how culturally big it was and how much everyone was engaging with it, myself included.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stick out in terms of me personally with reading, in terms of like my personal journey, the way the others that I mentioned did.
It did change what it meant to be a fantasy fan in a way that really only Lord of the Rings and Harry mm-hmm. Potter had before.
Yep. Definitely agree with that.
Well, so. Then. Thank you for sharing your story.
Yes. Johnny. Now, I think, so moving on to your stuff. So like high school, mid, late high school, like into college, or what around that time was stuff that you were reading that would have been of note, we'll say.
So there were four big series during high school that first it was three, and then a fourth was added that rotated just in the top of all the different kinds of books I was reading, fantasy and otherwise. So that was Harry Potter, The Dark Tower by Stephen King, Wheel of Time, and Pendragon by DJ McHale. And Wheel of Time was the one that came a bit later than the others. I don't think that I can talk about my reading journey without talking about my writing. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to do so. For context, for those four series, Dark Tower had been done when I read it. Harry Potter had not been, but it ended while I was in high school. And Pendragon also ended when I was in high school. And then it was right at the middle school / toward the beginning of high school when I started writing. And the book, the series that interacted with that most directly first was The Dark Tower, because that was the book where I was thinking about it. Well, after crying at the end, that was my first reaction at the direction that it took, in largely a good way for me.
Okay, I was going to ask. Okay.
Though it was difficult to read it at the time, as the days went on, I was thinking about it, and I realized that I wanted to be a writer while I was thinking that, because I wanted to make people feel the sense of fulfillment and journey and meaning that I had gotten from that series.
That's a worthwhile thought.
Yeah. And it was a, it was more of a strictly character-centered story than any of the other three, because
yeah,
Stephen King didn't have the tightest plot throughout the whole thing.
They kept that part in the adaptation.
they left out the character part though. But anyway, I'm not sure how much of that was timing, and how much of that was it being kind of a character based one and just sort of the way in which it ended. I don't really know. The other direct comparison or parallel was with Wheel of Time, because that was what I was really immersed in as I was writing my first major sci-fi fantasy stuff. And I could easily see, even at the time, the direct parallels that it had to the stories that I was creating, particularly in the way that the magic system played out and the way that it was used. The character stuff probably had more to do with the things I was going through at the time, and a little less so being parallels to characters in the Wheel of Time. It was the standard for me as far as kind of both plot and character being really meaningful things to put to paper. And mm-hmm. that was something that I strove to do in concert for a very long time, and arguably in theory still do. So it was the standard for me there. Pendragon also had an impact, though I didn't notice how much until much, much later, years and years later, when I saw how much I had kind of lifted from the ninth book in Pendragon, as far as the way that he was, sprinkling politics in there. And I was trying to, it's certainly not the types of politics that I interact with today, but just how, charismatic speakers and despotic regimes might act. Right. I kind of took that from the way that things were unfolding towards the end of Pendragon.
Which is interesting, because that's not what a lot of the series, the charismatic villain part it is, but right. That's not a lot of what the series is concerned with.
No.
Certainly in terms of, yeah.
No, because they do have, there are certain elements in the different worlds that they visit, but it's not as centered as it is when they have a story that takes place on Earth.
Yeah.
Because I guess right. He just wants to be a little more direct when it's actually on Earth. And then, of course, though this is like less of an obvious influence, the different and varied worlds were also a factor in Pendragon, though that has more to do with why I still find it compelling long after I've been a young adult.
It's not a series that I see a ton of discussion. I mean, part of it is
it is by far the least popular of those four series that I mentioned by a lot.
But it's interesting because it's similar to Harry Potter in that it starts a little bit older in terms of its audience, but also because like the main character grows with the reader or grows up with potentially with the reader.
Yes.
So it could be one of those bridge series, for lack of a better term, between like middle grade YA and middle grade and YA. What are some of the elements that you say that you would say have stuck with you?
There are the different worlds and just how kind of complete they feel in their own way. I mean, he's not going to win any big league world building contest.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong in terms of sheer ability, but they're just there's a water world, a medieval world, kind of a near future type world, jungle world, and they are all very creative and are just really fun to go back to and just kind of look at the details of it, you know, well along into adulthood. The other element, which is, well, I guess this is kind of the opposite of what you're asking, because it's by its very nature, it's not a, it doesn't have longevity, but the mystery element of Pendragon was beyond anything that I was reading definitely at the time. And it was more so than Harry Potter because it had to do with the very nature of everything that was happening. In Harry Potter, they find out a few more things about magic that they didn't know, but you didn't know the most basic stuff of how things were happening and why in Pendragon until the very beginning of the last book.
That's a good point. Yeah, there are more fundamental things that are teased throughout, but that aren't really even that's addressed in Harry Potter. So that's not what it's about, but.
Mm-hmm. And that has, and the reveals in Harry Potter have more to do with what happened in the past and certain, and motivations of certain characters, and not literally the nuts and bolts of what's happening.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that was kind of my foundation, and there was also the Foundation trilogy, but that was not as standout-ish. It was one of my favorites, but I guess it was the standard for sci-fi for me for a long time.
Have you watched the Apple TV show?
I have. I love the first season.
Okay.
I love it. Particularly, it's kind of, it follows the Empire and the and Harry Seldon and etc. But I will say that the Empire is where it really, really shines.
Okay. I haven't yet, so that's good to note.
Yeah. Yeah, it's worth checking out for sure. And now to talk about like actually the sustenance of reading, because I both in terms of reading and writing, college definitely had it take a back seat because it was just a different world for me, and I was focused a lot on more social stuff and trying different things that it was. It was like destined to be on the back burner at that time. However, Wheel of Time was not yet finished. And so that was a thread that I could hang on to and, you know, go and grab the next installments, because the last two books came out while I was in college. The 13th book right at the very beginning, and then the 14th in the middle of junior year. So that was still the most massive series that I had been reading, and was the kind of held the top spot for the longest time. Though since it was introduced, Harry Potter also held the top spot, and that it's changed from there. But that allowed me to be like, okay, this is still something that I'm going to invest some time in reading, because it was something that I had started that I was determined to finish. Also, right, it was more strictly around that transition period was A Song of Ice and Fire. That was something that I started, like, I think in the winter of my senior year of high school, and then blew right through those. It was a wild ride. And then read the fifth one when it came out in the summer after freshman year. And so that also was like, oh, there's still promise for, well, more adult series.
Yes.
to put it lightly, as I'm going into adulthood.
There is still that promise that we're eventually going to get
I was going to say I can't then talk about having read the sixth one because we can only look it to the past for this episode.
I'll be curious to see at what point will these statements become outdated.
you talk as if it is a when.
So you'd mentioned a lot about how Wheel of Time and the other series were in particular tied to your writing. What do you say is Song of Ice and Fire, or to what extent would you say Song of Ice and Fire was also tied to what you were writing, or at least what you had the time to write during college?
I did write something major in college, but it was late. There were two things. It was something that I wrote on my own time, and then I had my senior project. Song of Ice and Fire was right in the middle period, and it was just after I had finished my over 100K words book. It was like I must have started it like a month after, so it really didn't have an impact on my writing the way that Wheel of Time did. It might have. If the timing had been better.
Makes sense.
Even then, it wouldn't have been necessarily the same because it wasn't the first really big adult series that I was reading.
Right.
Even though it was more adult in certain ways.
It was probably similar to how Wheel of Time became for me a little bit. Maybe not quite as monumental, but similar.
How do you mean?
In the sense of being a big adult series that was not necessarily the first that you had read.
Oh, and that was when you
like
tried
Stormlight from yeah.
Okay, no, so it was you do mean the second time that you tried
yes,
it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Would you say, and this is a whole separate conversation, your classes? How helpful would you say your classes were to stuff that you've been writing since college? Let me know if you're going to talk about this later. And to what extent did you find, and I don't know how much speculative fiction you were writing in classes, but to what extent did you find the academic approach, or at least like the English department, et cetera, was either encouraging or discouraging of speculative fiction in different projects, exercises, papers?
I found it largely disheartening. And it was rough because I had really thought of writing as just like this is what I'm going to do. It's just a matter of how I get mm-hmm. there and what I'm doing around it. I did have for my senior year, I did have the professor who was the most friendly to fantasy, having written more speculative stuff himself. But when I say speculative, I mean stuff that's more along the lines of that magical realism. So yeah. Something that's mm-hmm. that's a little more adjacent to the realism genre.
Okay. That makes sense.
And so I remember him being fine with me writing. I was rewriting something that I had written at the beginning of high school, and he was, I remember being surprised at the, kind of the lopsided nature of his criticism versus what he liked. There were many weeks where it seemed like he had something in the, I think it was what's working and what's not working yet. And it seemed like there was just one thing in what's working, and it was just there, so there was something there. and not because he particularly wanted to say it. I ended up getting a B+, so the whole must have been better than the sum of its parts. But he wasn't asking any of the questions that I wanted answers to. He wasn't talking about any of like what's happening, how's this alien world work or anything like that. It was just all questions about character. And I'm like, I'm trying to write something that's, yes, I do care about character, but I'm trying to write something that's more balanced, and we're not treating it in a balanced way. So I had issues with that. It was different from my experiences in England, which was during my junior year, where I also had a teacher that pushed me, but I felt like he was working with me to make something that was better than it otherwise would have been. And in some ways, the senior project was better than it would have been. I think that he sharpened certain things of mine, but it was still disheartening at the end.
So almost the England professor then sounds like was more like in that working with you, trying to say, hey, this is the project, or this is what you want to write. How can we make what you want to write better? And how can we dig more into, like, say you're writing a fantasy story? How can we make these fantasy elements better or work better with the story versus the senior project? It sounds like was, this is the type of thing that I think is good writing, and this is how your project could better resemble what I, the professor, think is good writing.
You got it. Now, to be fair to the American professor, what I gave him was a multi POV jumping around time type of story that I was lifting from this kind of experimental era that I had in high school. Whereas the England one was following a single character throughout and building doing the world building gradually, and him just being a very real and relatable character, but not the most out of left field type of character. So there were a lot fewer jagged edges for the England professor to be confronted with.
Okay, that makes sense. And I want to make some of those are a little bit questions are a little bit leading, I had one of the professors that, the one creative writing class I took that was not as known for, certainly one of the not as sci-fi fantasy friendly ones.
He was the other end of the spectrum, actually.
Yes.
And I know who he's talking about because we went to college together.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. For context. I will say as frustrating as it sometimes was, I do think and I guess we're kind of talking around a conversation that happens in sci-fi fantasy circles. But I think there is a place for a lot of those more literary techniques to be more emphasized, generally speaking. But it just Go ahead.
To try to pick up what you're saying, it is there's always the potential to lean into those elements when you're if you're writing a sci-fi or fantasy story to have it for whatever this really means to have it read a bit more literarily.
Yeah,
but it just all depends on the. On what you're writing about and the type of effect that you're going for.
Yeah, and that's where it would. I see what you're saying. It was disheartening where they were almost wanting a different. You were right, almost in a different realm, maybe than you wanted to,
right.
Which would be not, especially if you were looking at writing as a career. And maybe you felt, correct me if I'm misinterpreting this, that you weren't quite getting the development of the types of skills you wanted to develop from the what you wanted to write for your career perspective, maybe.
Right. It was, they knew how to coach for writing at and for college. And yeah, not really how to write commercially because they didn't. I mean, the books could be in stores potentially, but like not, it wasn't the same.
Yeah, oh, that is frustrating, but makes not surprising.
There were many times where after the umpteenth time that the professor would say, "You're not really." Doing this here and here, and the number of times that I wanted to say I'm not trying to do that, so let's move past this part, let's move past this line of inquiry and get to work on something I'm trying to do. But it wasn't as informative of my reading because despite those through lines of Wheel of Time and Song of Ice and Fire, the reading really did take a back seat in college. For some reason, certainly at the beginning, I started to do more of a thing where I was reading a lot, but it was not anything that is standing out to me right now. And I did it in like rotation. So I had like four books going at one time. And I would rotate between them. The only one that is coming up, and I remember having this in my freshman dorm, is Mistborn.
Huh.
And what I will say about Mistborn, obviously what I think we would both agree is the most extraordinary thing about Mistborn is the ending of that first trilogy.
Oh, yes.
And that... The last big ending I had read, because neither Wheel of Time or Song of Ice and Fire was finished, was Pendragon, which despite what I said about the rest of the series, the ending did leave me wanting. I just thought that it was kind of rushed and didn't give me the sense of satisfaction that I expected. So maybe on at least a subconscious level, reading that ending of Mistborn made me be like, "Oh yeah, you can have this kind of ending. It wasn't just limited to like Harry Potter. you can have something that is this absolutely culminative and if that's a word and satisfying as this and maybe that means that I can write." Something like that.
If you like it, say with Mistborn, I think you don't have to like the totality of something for it to have an impact. So I think even if the ending was the thing you got as far as thinking either you could read things that were still impactful or that you could write something like that eventually, I think that's certainly worthwhile.
Yes. And that is something that will repeat a little bit, but I'm not quite there yet. I first have to go to right after college, where I am not going to point to a specific book. Instead, I'll point to the two of the jobs that I had after graduating from college.
Okay.
That had a huge impact. And that was when I worked in a Half-Price Books warehouse, and when I cataloged new books for a K-12 vendor. And those books were, in the first case, since these were kind of the leftovers of the leftovers, you know, it being Half-Price Books, we could take home 3 free books a week. So I only worked there for a summer, but it built up pretty fast. And then for the second job, they did cost, but we had a little bit of a discount. Since it was a warehouse sale that happened, you know, every 6 months, it was already really low. And so it didn't cost much, and it was really convenient for me to get books from there. I have finished all of the books that I got from Half-Price Books. I am still going through the books that I got from the cataloging job. So, you know, I've put in, I'm not like, I haven't strictly been reading those books. So, right. I've put in other books in, you know, before them. So it's not like I've only been going through those, but still it was over a longer period of time. I worked there for 2 years. And so I really did build up a stash. That gave me a, you know, I have a goal that I'm working through. You know, I have these to read, and so I need to read them. And these were by no means strict. They were all over the place. They were not only strictly fantasy and sci-fi. They weren't strictly fiction.
Sure.
So it kept my tastes really varied, and I just kind of alternated between everything, and was definitely a basis for my adult reading life, without question.
The varied taste thing, that's worth it, because it could also rejuvenate your desire to read more sci-fi fantasy, or give you a different appreciation for it when you're reading other stuff.
It did. It probably offered a contrast for me, as opposed to being like, oh, the main stuff that I read. It did bring me back to when I was younger, when I had more of a, it was a little bit more varied when I was younger, where I had just kind of, I'll call them fanciful stories, just to kind of have a umbrella term for them, combined with like middle grade types of realistic fiction that were sometimes like about dark subjects, but they were like accessible for however young I was, like 11 or 12.
Okay, that makes sense.
And so it's a funny little circle there that ended up happening.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
So for context, the Half-Price books I collected in 2015, a year out of college, and then the cataloging books were from 2017 to 2019. But it was actually between those two jobs that I read two books that I considered really impactful for me. And I'll start with the less of the two. And that was at least how I considered it. I'll say at least how I considered it at the time. And that's Magicians. So the Magician's trilogy was the only series that was able to contend with the big four from high school that had ever been able to do so. And it did not take long for it to become my favorite. Because of, and this is something where it's not even a little subtle. it's totally about, you know, where I felt I was at the time and my relationship mm-hmm. with fantasy and my relationship with even, I still think that, he was, many things were an allegory for writers. I mean, him himself being a writer, sure. Lev Grossman, and so I took it as such. And so between that and, you know, things regarding relationships and reconciling with different things from your past were all just messages and topics that blew me away at the time, because it was a character that started off at 17 and ended up at like, I don't know, 33. And I was, four, so I was right in the sweet spot for it.
Yeah, but yeah, like it's you were probably the target audience for that when you read it.
Yes, I've no doubt that I was. And it had just been released, the last book had just been released 2 years before I read them all. So there weren't a lot of people for it to have cycled through yet for the whole story. It was just people my age, and at this point it's the people a lot younger than me if they've come across yeah. those books, so that's great. The second book was Malazan. And don't worry. I'll tell you why.
I was going to say, I if Magicians was the lesser, then what was the? Okay, so God.
Magicians drew its power from how much I liked it. Malazan drew its power from how much I didn't. Now. I had been of the, as a writer, I had been of the impression, as someone who, as I've mentioned before, likes to pay attention to both plot and characters, and is, and has always been very guarded or defensive about having the leeway to write different plot things that are like maybe a little less emotionally engaging, because I think that they kind of inherently add value to the book and to the reading experience.
Okay.
My impression of the first half of Gardens of the Moon, the first book of Malazan, which is as far as I got, was that was many of the things that you praise, that because I think I had the impression that it was a large world and he was doing a lot of time jump and plot things that I couldn't get my teeth into, and it just kind of gave me a perspective on what the experience could be like of someone who wasn't really here for that part of the story. And so it let me read my writing more as a separate reader, and realize that maybe I needed to inherently focus a little bit more on character than I was. Now, obviously, that's not what the impression everyone took away from Malazan, but that is what it did for me.
No, that's a worthwhile impact, so especially given, especially since a lot of the books or series that you talked about are tied to your writing or the impact they've had on your writing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Gardens, there are lots of valid reasons that for people to bounce off of Gardens to the Moon. I think it's...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Is it one of the weaker ones now that you consider it?
Here, well, I've only read two and like a third, but I've generally heard that it... Listen this way. I've seen the term "Gardens of the Moon weirdness" thrown around.
Okay.
I'm not informed enough on the general opinions on the books because I've been largely avoiding conversations around it, except for like specific thing like spaces. But I do get that. My impression is that Gardens of the Moon is generally not indicative of the books or the rest of the series in terms of how it's structured and. Because it was also originally written as a movie script.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's where I think, and I get.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. No, I remember the first pages of it, and I can totally see that.
Yes, yeah, that prologue is very much so, like, very cinematic.
You might as well, like, have castle exterior, like, at the
yes.
at the beginning yes. of it.
Yes.
That's crazy.
But I get where you could say that a lot of the stuff seems extraneous. A lot of those little world-building details are important and do come back later, but... That being said, I think it is valid to say that there it is a weird structure and it's one that in a valid way won't work for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Something that has helped immensely with my enjoyment of the series is having lots of asterisks and something. Very specific expectations going into the series.
Yeah.
So in that sense, being aware of the cultural or all the conversations around it to an extent helped. I went in knowing that there would be issues I might have had with it. And wanting to persist anyways, I also definitely understand where it wouldn't work and why a lot of the extraneous things feel very extraneous.
I wish that I could tell you what got me reading it, but I don't remember because that would be useful context. But at least I can say that I didn't have those warnings before.
No, that's fair. Yeah, because there is a lot, and I often try to differentiate between when I use the word complex and complicated, and it is complicated, and that's not in a necessarily good sense. I think on the whole it adds to. I mean, what I'd already said about the scope and epicness of the series, but I certainly see how people could read Gardens of the Moon and say, oh, well, why do I care about this? And wait, who's the main character? And like, if you're just going into it expecting, hey, this is a. Yeah, again, depending on what you're expecting.
Yeah. And maybe it would be different today. I don't know. I told myself that I would give it to halfway, and I decided to retire it. But stuff was kind of sort of starting to happen, so I almost went through with it. So I don't know. Who knows what the future holds?
I want to ask you about this one because there's a couple. There's one big. there is something big that happens in the first 100 pages. That's what I will say that. But I know what general plot line you're thinking of in terms of not much is happening, and I wouldn't disagree with that there's a section of a portion of the book where a lot of stuff is not happening.
Well, sure is a lot not happening right now. Are you what? Trying to do something? No, never mind.
Well, let's not well, go into the Wheel of Time books.
No. I will not make unfair comparisons either. So that just leaves one, which I would put in a category of magicians in two respects. One, in that it is kind of in the same way that Mistborn, I said I'd come back to this, that Mistborn was for me, this is what a good ending is. It's just like, oh, I can still be blown away by something. And that is Hyperion.
Mm-hmm.
Which was less. And then the second respect in which it's the same is this is the inaugural announcement of this, that it is also in the rotation of what would now be the Big Six.
Oh, okay.
Because yes, this is news to Johnny.
I like this. God,
it is. I actually, Pendragon is really the only other one where I feel like it has aged like a fine wine. Like I like it more the more that time passes, which is it's either stays largely the same, like with Harry Potter, albeit at a high level. Or it goes down, like the Wheel of Time definitely has gone down, and that I don't know, that probably it's more than I want to get into right now, but it probably has something to say about like what is arresting for the reader at that particular point in time. Song of Ice and Fire is another one that definitely went down fairly quickly, because the immediacy of what was happening was of a lot of importance for Song of Ice and Fire.
Like culturally, you mean?
No, I mean like the tension of what was going on.
Oh, yep.
And how it flowed. I haven't gotten that impression as much with Abercrombie. And that might be because I knew that was kind of the standout feature of it sooner. Like it is like to me, I actually, now that I think about it, I would disagree. Like I do like the characters, but I think that for me, its strongest element is how it grabs you and takes you through the story. Not plot necessarily, but pacing and flow.
No, that's
and
worthwhile observation.
That was just more nakedly its strength to me, more so than A Song of Ice and Fire was, where it had that going for it, but it also had, you know, it was more like in some ways more traditional high fantasy with some of the trappings that it had. And so I guess I took it as more of a surprise when I found that I wasn't like holding on to it as much as I thought I would.
Okay. No, that's makes sense.
And yeah, that's it. That's it for me.
No, thanks for sharing some good points and good reflections and some contrasts.
Yes, indeed. That brings us well past an hour and a half.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, that was I ended up having more written down than I did at the beginning.
Good.
So that's good. That is I've exhausted all of it.
Yeah. Good stuff. But yeah, so this has been the Acolytes of Merlin, our discussion on what has sustained us and inspired us to keep on reading, kind of from really from, kind of from the last, the end of where we left off with our lives, so to speak, in the last discussion. I'm your hosts, Johnny and John, and thank you for listening.